Good morning, wonderful listeners. You've tuned into Post Session Podcast, a podcast filled with the stoke of a surf session and the wise guidance of an ocean voyager. Your water-loving hosts are ready to share this infectious state of mind while encouraging and inspiring you for your next adventure. We're going to start out with some post-session notes where we talk about the water, because that's what we're into. Laurel's going to tell us about her surf this week. I'll talk about some free diving, and then she's going to totally bum us out with the injustice of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. Wah, wah. We're going to dive deeper and get into the meat of our conversation today, which is going to be about my least favorite word, dreams. And then Laurel's going to wrap the whole thing up with God Waters, where she spits a little God knowledge on us in her Devo, and we're going to give you guys some homework at the very end.
Womp womp.
Okay, so yeah, post-session notes. Laurel, what's up?
Road trip!
With four exclamation points, I
Road trip! Mm-hmm. Hey, we went up the road this weekend to Holden Beach with friends, and man, that's really fun. Going, like, getting in the car and you're driving somewhere, it's kind of like, you know, when you're trying to get out of bed at 4:30 in the morning, you're a little bummed out. But once you're on the road, you're excited for the adventure.
Did somebody bring breakfast?
No, but you know what? We all met at Starbucks.
Okay.
And got a coffee for the road. So anyway, we rode about an hour up the road a piece, 17 south, and enjoyed some clean waves, beautiful waves, some good size to them. They were a lot of work to get into, though. You had to either get in super early before they peaked up, and otherwise you were going over a cliff. So it was either one or the other, and you kind of had to make the choice quickly. So once again, I had my newbie friend out there, and man, looking down the steep wave can be intimidating. And she got into the situation where she kind of would be paddling for the wave and then right at the last moment pull out. And
but that sounds like it could even be worse.
It is. It's more dangerous than just blowing the wave. But if you pull out, you know, too late, then you're really in trouble. But
yeah, you get pregnant.
But anyway, so, you know, over and over again, she kind of chickened out, and another friend of ours, he's a neuropsychologist, Tony, Uncle Tony, we call him, T.O. Tony, finally he paddled over to her, and since he's, you know, all up in your head, he offered her this little tidbit of advice, do you commit to Jesus?
And she looked at him and blinked a few times.
Like stunned.
Yeah, mouth open, jaw agape.
But anyway, she didn't miss another wave. I don't know what happened in her head. I think it had just exploded. But anyway, she got into those waves. She committed and made it happen. So, Ashley, what about you? Did you see some sunrises this week?
Oh, my gosh. Every morning, you know, my little Ani birds in kindergarten now. So yeah, I've seen some sunrises, but not the meditative type.
Okay.
I did have a class this past weekend though, and I love teaching freediving, but it was exhausting because I usually co-teach with my husband, Ren, but he's in Boston or Salem or
Man, he hung you up to dry, huh?
He did. He's out, he's outfitting and moving a sailboat, which means he's playing on the water.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, yeah. Poor fella's got a tough life. But I had to teach by myself. I am so grateful because I get a ton of help with the kids from, you know, their grandparents, from my parents. So my parents came this weekend and really helped me out, which meant I could focus on the class. But, you know, the hard part without having Ren there is you just have to be on the whole time. You know, a third of the class is spent teaching people not to freak out in the water, which is totally exhausting. One third is spent trying to drill good technique, so it's very repetitive. And the other third is just the Ashley show. We're imparting a ton of information to people.
Well, you and Ren are a great team, so it does seem like, you know, when you're together, he can do some parts that you can't, and you get a break, and... And I can say when I took your class...
Yeah, tell me.
You coaxed me very calmly and sweetly, but Ren gave you that look that you knew, okay, I'm going down and I'm not coming back up. I'm just going in because he gave me the you know, the stare down.
Yeah, well, we do have a pretty good yin and yang. Which one is the harder one, the black one, the dark one?
That's Ren.
Is it the yin or is that the yang?
Oh, gee.
Probably the yang, right?
I don't know.
Well, whatever that side is, that's Ren, totally. But, I mean, the students were great. We had a great time.
How many students did you have?
This was a very small class, luckily. Okay. So we had 4 students, 1 returning student, just to go diving, so that's 5. And then we had 5 people also line diving, but mm-hmm. they'd already been educated. They were just out to practice and stuff like that. But it was small, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to handle it. The hardest part, I think, instead of, you know, other than just being on the whole time, is that a lot of the issues these guys had were anxiety-related.
Sure.
Fear-induced, and I find that really difficult.
Must have air.
Right. their inner animal, their total, you know, biological response to asphyxiation is, I gotta breathe.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to teach people to ignore that.
It is. So what's one tip that you would give maybe our listeners who are thinking about taking a free diving class that would help them prepare? Like, what could you do even before the class to help mitigate that?
Well, I mean, physically, there's a ton of things that I could tell you. But, you know, psychologically, I think you just have to sign up. You just have to commit to it. Sign up.
Commit!
Yeah, it's about making that first commitment. It's scary.
Yeah.
It can be, yes.
Is there another technique or something?
Well, you know, equalizing is what I would say. If you're trying to do a class or learn how to freedive, before you come in, if you want to have the best experience, pop your ears as much as you can leading up to it.
Because that's the hard thing to learn in such a short amount of time. So you need to be practicing that. I remember that. I remember you had told me that, and I'd even tried it, and I still struggled with one ear popping that ear. So that's a good one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, you know what? Why don't you just tell us about the injustice of the week?
Wait a minute. I have a couple of tips, too. Wait a minute. Don't you want my tips?
Okay, cut. And Laurel, what about surfing?
Oh, I could
give us some tips.
Okay, I could give you a couple of things. So if you're paddling out on a big wave day and you're on a bigger board because you're a newbie. So 2 things that I learned. One, I learned in Mexico when an older gentleman gave me a tip. And he said, when you turtle roll, and you got to know how to turtle roll, but if you know how to turtle roll, when you do it and there's a big wave coming, you want to jut your board up, shove it into the wave as hard as you can, because that wave's coming at you with so much power, and you want to kind of combat that with your own power. So that just means that's that less feet that you're going to go backwards. So shove your board as hard as you can into the wave, because it's shoving into you, and so the point is not to be pushed back. Next one would be get back up on your board as quickly as possible and get that first arm in the water to paddle, because there's some momentum that you're going to get coming off after the wave has passed. There's actually a little bit of suction there. So if you can get a little momentum right at that critical moment, you're going to get out there that much quicker and less likely to be pummeled by, you know, the next oncoming set. So you can do this.
So isn't, you know what? It just occurred to me that that's a great metaphor for all of the hardships in life.
Yeah.
Get back on the board, paddle as hard as you can. And there you go. That's where you're going to make the biggest jumps, the biggest momentum, create the biggest momentum in your
journey. Our next podcast is going to be everything we needed to know we learned in the water, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Hope you guys are looking forward to that.
Dun, dun. Dun, dun.
Is it that time?
It's that time. It's time for the injustice of the week. Let's talk about bathing suits.
Yeah, let's.
Okay. More specifically, the top. The pull-out pads. What are they for?
Okay, wait. Are you talking about in a bikini top, the little insert that's supposed to hide the ninis?
Sometimes it's a bikini top. Sometimes it's a one-piece. Sometimes it's a tankini. They all have the pull-out things that you have one wipeout or one big wave, and that thing's in a clump under your arm. It looks like you have a tumor.
But it's not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's the freaking pull-out pad.
And you know what? Even if you're
What's the point?
Even if you're not doing something active, every time you put that bathing suit on, you got to adjust that junk.
And it doesn't even, it's a thin piece of padding. Just sew it in. I think it's just cheap that they don't want to sew it in. Just sew it in. They're sewn-in pads.
Why don't they make it? You really think it's just to
They used to all be sewn in, and now that's the pull-out pad, but why?
You know what?
I need to know.
I challenge you, listener, or anybody out there, if you know why they don't sew that junk in, please tell us.
Please comment.
Comment. Let us know, because, you know, it's just one last thing I have to Google, and I want your expert advice on this subject.
Yes. Okay, so... Speaking of bathing suits, we have to hit the bottoms.
Oh, so, but to be clear, we agree that we both agree pull-out pads suck. Okay.
Yes.
Agree,
and agree. Okay. And then, Ashley, are you a Brazilian type bottom?
You know, absolutely not. I think it's funny you even asked me that question. I'm a total prude about bathing suits, and I expect everyone else to be the exact same. I want to impose my bathing suit values on everybody.
Oh, man. So, you know, I mean, literally, so I am curious, and I think our listeners could comment as well, because there's probably a reason for the thong bathing suit or the Brazilian. I mean, if you want to get your butt more tan, maybe that's something.
Yeah, but, or dry out those butt pimples.
Okay, there could be that.
So, show your grandfather what you're made of.
And there's two kinds of, you know, bikini. There's the thong variety. There's the probably like a four-finger swath of material. And then there's the one finger. I mean, there's like the completely up the butt, which, you know, it is a little disturbing if a woman passes me kind of close, and you want to stare down, you want to turn around, you want to go in. I mean, I'm not sure
what's the point. Yeah, me neither, because if it's so distracting that you're trying to look away, then it's a little offensive. And I know that everybody has the right to do whatever the heck they want, which I kind of don't agree with either.
And I think it's cultural too. I think more South American.
Well, true.
You know, a little tropical climates. I see a lot more of it down in Puerto Rico.
But we're not in South America. You know what I mean?
No. And it was disturbing to see this 16-year-old girl come up in the coffee shop that's off the beach. I mean, it's on the beach, but it's, you know, you have to cross a street to get to it. And, you know, she basically had on a thong in the coffee shop, which, you know, there's people there getting ready to go to work. So it's a little like, ooh, jarring.
And she was 16 or so.
Yeah, so that's kind of young. But
do you think...
I wouldn't let my kid...
No. Connie Bird? No, ma'am. But I have a question, and this might, you know, strike a nerve, but isn't that sort of pornographic? I mean, isn't that like child pornography to let your kid just completely be at the mercy of this cruel
I don't know. I think all her friends are doing it, and she might have snuck out of the house with a regular bottom and switched
maybe
on the way, so who knows. But you know, the one funny thing, I was out surfing by myself one day, and this person kind of passed me in my peripheral. They had on red bottoms, and I was like, oh, she doesn't have a top on. And then I look over again, and it's a dude. And he was wearing girl bottoms.
Okay, so why? Did you
that
ask
That was
him?
Almost as disturbing as the thong.
I'm sure you asked him why.
No, I didn't ask him why.
What?
I swam away as fast as possible.
That is not your M.O. I can't believe you didn't ask him why. I can't believe we don't know.
So there's a why, like I should have said. So.
Dude.
Unknown stranger
you
person.
You got some chick bottoms on, man.
I figured it was either European.
Uh-huh.
But he didn't look European. Not that they have a look or, you know, whatever. But yeah.
They have a style. They have a style.
Yes. And he didn't have that style. He looked regular American Joe. And
sort of sloppy.
He could have had a mental health condition. I don't know.
But was it a Speedo or was it totally female
bottoms?
It
looked like female bottoms.
Because
maybe
that's
he stuck
not
his
a European
girls on.
Thing. That's just a different kind of thing altogether.
Okay, enough of the injustice of the week.
Okay, injustice is imposing your nakedness on me. Let's dive deeper, though, shall we?
Yes, definitely need to dive deeper.
I think so, too. Let's recap a bit, since this episode kind of builds on the first episode that we did about, you know, setting goals, and it loosely builds, but we left off talking about how to make a concrete plan by which to work towards your goals. I mentioned the whiteboard and actually writing things out on the whiteboard, like a straight-up five-year plan, and you start executing that junk.
I like that you posted it above the door so nobody could reach it and erase one of the steps or something.
Yeah, that's exactly why I posted it above the door. But, and you could see it every day, too, right?
Yeah.
But I thought our advice was really good. I really think we jumped the gun a bit, though, because we talked about how to work towards the goals without addressing how to find them to begin with. You know, I think we need to step back and look at the big picture, how to define what your goal is even going to be. Now, this is where I know we're not going to agree, because I am a skeptic. I'm the skeptic in this little audio marriage that we have going on, because I stray far away from words like passion and magic and dreams. I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is to vomit all over myself.
So what have you got against magic? Come on.
Look, it's just that I really think that these words are overused, they're misused, they conjure some kind of ideal in your mind that you should have this flaming passion in your heart, that you've had it from birth, and if only you could just tap into that.
Okay, definition of passion is a strong desire that can get you to do amazing things.
Right, like, but the problem isn't that there is passion. Of course, there's the problem is that everybody is trying to, you know, they're spending their life on this journey to figure out what their passion is. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not so simple. Maybe your passion, it's not a maybe, it's true. Your passion is ever evolving. It depends on where you are in your life, what age, what step, what season you're in. So it's kind of trite to say, oh, find your passion, live your dreams. What that? What do you mean by that?
Maybe that's more like the artistic community, you know?
Well, I hate that junk, just so you know. I will say, though, and this directly relates to what we're talking about, dreaming, barf. My husband and I are big fans of what we call dream dates. Well, I just made that up. We don't really call it that. We just call it date
night.
Obviously
not, because the word offends you.
It does. We leave our children with the parents for a couple hours. We go sit somewhere, and we sip a yum, yum beer. It's got to be beer.
Okay, not wine.
Wine doesn't do... No.
Okay. Let's get down and dirty.
Talk
about it.
Let's talk about it. We sip our yum yum beer. We've got a notebook in front of us, and we just brainstorm. We love it. We've always loved doing this together.
I like it.
You would love it. I mean, we basically do that too, but with coffee and cookies. We don't talk about specifics, you know? Well, this is how we're going to do this. Another, we just dream about the next year or five or two.
How many years?
We just talk about the next year or five or ten.
Okay.
Retirement. And some of these dreams grow legs, but most are really just a way to keep us light, make us smile, keep us excited about our fantasy future together. And what this sesh really does is it solidifies what's most important to us as a family. Because when we look at the notebook, we define our values. By brainstorming, we can clearly see where our values really are and weed out the other nonsense that's not important.
In case it's like sipping margaritas on the beach, that's not your value?
That's not my value. And it should not be, guys, your end goal. It should be a product of whatever you're doing. Sipping margaritas on a beach is great, but...
Byproduct.
It's a byproduct of the good life, right?
Okay. I get it. I mean, I like that. You know, I think it's a whole lot better than you and him having a date discussing, you know, the day of however hard the day was, issues with the kids, or even the immediate tomorrows. That's almost like a way to ruin a date.
Absolutely. Talk about the,
But I like where you're going with the kind of figuring out your values or, you know, dreaming, and you know, y'all are dreaming. That's exactly what you're doing. But I think I think you kind of touched on something that, you know, I think what drives you crazy about it is this idea of looking for the good life.
Yes, looking for the good life, looking for the easy way or this or that. And I want to be very clear that your dream, it doesn't have to be income producing. It doesn't have to be, like I said earlier, the beach life or your next job or anything like that. It can be the hard stuff too. If you are feeling convicted, you know, because sometimes in these brainstorming sessions, we also start to define what we think, where we think God is moving us. Mm-hmm. And if you're convicted to sell all your junk and bring your family on a mission trip to Africa, that dream notebook's not going to lie about those deep feelings that you're having.
Ooh, you did get deep.
That's what I do.
So is that what y'all are going to do? Or, you know, I guess y'all do some of that in whatever island or country y'all are in when you're free diving. Or you kind of have a mission there, huh?
I totally feel like our journey with God started when we were non-believers on the sailboat traveling around. That's when, a couple years in, when God first spoke to me and said, look, there's something else, there's something bigger. And maybe we'll talk about that on a different show.
Well, I will say a pet peeve of mine with Christians, though, is...
Talk to me.
That whole idea of God's will. Mm-hmm. This ambiguous cloud that's going to seep into your body at some point, and you're going to have this life that's God's will. So, like, instead of going out and knocking on doors to get a job, you're waiting for God's will employer to call you up and offer that dream job that you've always had. So I think...
Yes.
I think sometimes we... I mean, I've known young, especially young people, maybe sometimes get this idea that God's will is going to be manifest in their life without doing something. God is out there on the road. You got to get out on the road to run in, intersect with God's will out there doing something. And God's so cool. He just gives you, you can do whatever. But, and he just wants, you know, to be a part of it.
Can we do a high five on the air?
Boom.
I hope I wasn't too loud. I totally agree. There's nothing that makes me want to vomit more than the word passion. Then also this idea of just rubbing the lamp and little God genie coming out and granting your magical wishes. Ooh. I don't think you can clearly see God's plan for your life until you start moving in the direction.
Okay, last time we did a little talking about the imposter syndrome. And, you know, we were talking about tools for accomplishing goals. One of mine was like the 7 habits of highly effective people. It helped me narrow my focus. I'm creative. I like to do a bunch of different things. It helped me realize that those people that are effective are putting their energy into one thing and doing kind of one thing at a time, although I like to multitask. But the other thing is, I kind of looked up because you mentioned like not feeling like you were there, and even though you are a world record holding freediver. So I had to look up this imposter syndrome thing. And so here are some common thoughts associated with imposter syndrome. First of all, there's the I must not fail. Like the idea that I think people don't get started on a goal, or even feeling like that they are convicted and need to move in a direction, but they're afraid of failure, so they don't even start. So that's not you, obviously, but I think that's part of it.
Oh, that I can relate to that totally.
Okay, and the next is another thought might be, I feel like a fake. Imposters believe they do not deserve success or professional accolades and feel that somehow others have been deceived into thinking otherwise.
Yeah, also I can relate to that. You're always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
And then it's all down to luck.
Luck.
Yeah, the tendency to attribute success to luck or other external reasons. Like I heard you say, you know, that maybe you got lucky that time that, you know, or all the different times that you've gotten a world record, you know, title.
You know, I remember having these feelings as a kid also. I can shoot hoops.
Okay.
I'm a good shot. Oh. And I remember one time during a basketball game, I was in the double digits. I was scoring.
Wow.
I did it one time. I got afraid after that.
I
was afraid that, I don't know, I just got, excuse me, I got lucky that time, or it wasn't going to, I was going to really suck after that. I don't know what it was. Imposter syndrome, I guess.
Well, let's talk about, here's some things to mitigate the negative effects of imposter syndrome. Recognize imposter feelings when they emerge. Awareness is the first step. Rewrite your mental programs. Instead of telling yourself they are going to find you out or that you don't deserve success, remind yourself that it's normal not to know everything and that you will find out more as you progress. I mean, I think maybe this is something that people that are frequently good at whatever they try may end up suffering with a little bit, because you are naturally good at a lot of things.
Thank you. It does make you afraid that the failure is going to be really tough at the end there.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, you know what I think I need right now?
What?
Now that I'm totally bummed. And by the way, I wish that the answer to imposter syndrome was just eating more cake.
Or Nutella.
Yeah, like just shove this down your throat and that'll go away.
Well, this will make you feel better. At least the you don't have the opposite of this, which is the egotistical, obnoxious asshole. Right? Yeah. Like, they're the person that everything they do is golden, and even when they suck at it, they think that they're wonderful.
Bless their little hearts.
Bless their souls.
Speaking of.
Okay, maybe we need to go into a little...
Tread into some God waters.
Yeah. Wrapping up the deep dive. You know, don't go blabbing your dream to a bunch of people. Wait until you've committed to a plan and then find your people. Like, if you're a writer, get in a writer's group. If you're a surfer, take a lesson. You know, like, get those little first starter things. Yeah. And talk your dreams with those people who are going to know. A lot of times it's not your husband or friend. Or best friend.
Your mom can't be your support group because she's just going to say yes to everything you do.
So, speaking of talking about dreams, let's go back to Genesis, the story of Joseph and his brother. So, let's just say it like it is. Joseph was the youngest of 11 brothers, and he was a spoiled brat.
Amen.
He was his father's favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad made him a special coat. And he tattled on his brothers. Like, he was out in the fields, and he didn't think they were working hard enough. He came back and ratted them out to dad.
Not cool.
No. So, he was on a bad path here, and then he had a dream. Here we go. Joseph said to his brothers, "Listen to this dream I had. We were all out in the field gathering bundles of wheat. All of a sudden, my bundle stood straight up, and your bundle circled around it and bowed down to mine."
Oh, hell no.
Well, how do you think they responded?
Just like that?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. If somebody came up to you, your younger sibling came up to you and told you about their condescending, hippy-dippy dream, you'd be like, get out. That sounds more like a nightmare, right?
Yeah. So, I don't know if you know the rest of the story, but basically his brothers thought about killing him and then just decided to fake the death, brought like a bloodied coat back to dad and told him that he'd been eaten by like a lion. Meanwhile, they'd sold him to some other family. But he ended up being that ruler in Egypt who saved the day in the long run for that family. So I guess, you know, part of it was he really did have this dream and interpretation gift, but he learned some wisdom the hard way, the long way. And telling the dream too soon can cause negative reactions. So be cautious, guys. That little dream of yours is fragile. Maybe it's only a seed. Maybe it's already been stomped on. But don't worry. God is able to resurrect anything, including his children and his children's dreams.
Maybe filter also, as you mentioned before, who you're telling your dreams to, because, come on, how did he think that was going to
He didn't end? Think that out.
He did not think that out. Well, as we say, bless his little heart.
Yeah.
Okay, that was really cool. I love how well that... that bit of scripture that Devo kind of worked into our subject matter and the very practical application at the end. That was awesome.
So how's your contest entry coming? Let's talk about goals. You were writing a something for a contest, writing contest.
Yeah, well, that was my homework. You told me to do some homework, so I did. Yep. I didn't get as far along as you did, I'm sure, but I started two. I have two ideas. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I started writing this kid's story that I've been thinking about for a really long time. Oh, it's Babyzilla versus Super Big Sis.
Babyzilla?
Babyzilla, yeah.
Is that like Bridezilla?
It's like Bridezilla, but baby
worse
format.
With stinky diapers.
Stinky diapers, screaming in your face, throwing food at you, kicking over your block castles, nice. You know, just destroying the world around you.
Yeah.
With a cute little face. And then baby, or Super Big Sis, she can handle that junk. That's her superpower.
Wow, I hadn't met one of them yet.
I have. She lives with me. Her name is Ani Chapman. But I love this idea, and I've never written fiction before. I've practiced a little bit just to get the wheels greased, but this is totally outside of my wheelhouse. So backup plan, I can just go narrative, memoir style, and
I love it. I can picture that children's book, though. I think I can just see, you know, this kid, maybe even with a Halloween costume on, just killing everything that this little girl's kind of got going on. Like, every time she sets up shop with her little dolls or whatever, he's, like, destroying it. So,
or mom and dad are super struggling, you know, at supper time trying to feed the baby, and then Super Big Sis can swoop in and put her magic powers on him, make him calm down.
Yeah, I like that. You got to finish that. I want to hear that, and I think the audience wants to, you know, get a little teaser.
Teaser on that. What I need is for you to tell me how your work is going so you can inspire us with your, what do you call it when you work real hard?
Perseverance?
Sure.
I've written an article, like the basics of an article, and something I found for writing is just don't critique, just write. So I just wrote the basis for the article and what I thought I wanted to write, and it hasn't been edited, which is really the long part of the journey. So but I've started it, and I've got a good, you know, I've got it outlined and filled in a little bit. So
sweet. Yeah. So your continuing homework is to start the editing process.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, by next week I'm gonna have like a good edit.
Ooh.
Yeah. No.
What about our homies? What are we going to leave them for homework?
I think there needs to be some brainstorming happening.
Yep. Like Laurel says, you don't worry about, you know, how you're going to get there and all this stuff. Just write it out. Just puke all over the paper. And you might not even have any goals or dreams to put a goal towards. But this space that you create, this little sunrise quiet time, is going to allow you to really dig deep and figure out what's important to you.
Yeah, and remember, you guys, we are your community now.
Mo-ha-ha-ha.
Leave your dreams with us by commenting at www.postsessionspodcast.com. We'll read some aloud during the next podcast and talk to you through the process. And hopefully we can all talk to each other. So,
but also, if Laurel's fart jokes are driving you crazy, or if her topics about breasts and bathing suits are just daunting, they are like nails on a chalkboard, let us know. Comment at the website or leave a comment at Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you fortuitously stumbled across this little project.
Most of all, thank you, friend, for listening. We appreciate you.
We do. Thank you so much.